All right, we're here with Ali Alvarigo. This is Dwayne Brummett, schooltalk.com. Hello, Ali.
Hey, Dwayne, how's it going?
Wonderful. It's going wonderful. So just had a great weekend, and I'm ready to rock and roll. We got camps going on here and, you know, the Ninja Turtle movie coming up and all that stuff. So it's all good.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny. Right now, I'm kind of like the Wizard of Oz in my ivory tower watching my – I have my two schools on the monitors right now, and I'm watching my women's I Love Kickboxing program, and we have like 14 women training right now as I speak to you. So it's kind of exciting, not just women, guys and women. So it's pretty cool to be able to sit here in my home office, chat with you on the phone, watch my studios in progress. And, man, you know, that it's just it took a long time to get to this point. I would have been the guy in that room teaching the class. You know, I wouldn't have had to watch it on the monitor. I would have been teaching it. But now it's just a great feeling to have the right people, the right facility and making it happen. You know, so it's kind of an exciting time.
Yeah, that could be kind of creepy, too.
Yeah, well, you know what? I introduced myself to some women that were training last night when I was teaching my martial art class, and I say, I recognize you. We've never met before, but I've watched on our camera system sometimes about, you know, where you're training and all you guys, and they were like, oh, that's weird. I'm like, no, I don't do it in a creepy way. I just want to make sure my classes are running nicely and doing a good job, and they laughed. So it was almost like the voyeur. I think there was a movie about that where some guy was some crazy voyeur watching people in an apartment building. So I wanted to be clear that I'm not that guy.
Right.
And the cameras are strategically placed in all the right places, not bad places. You know, it's just on my training floors, my office, my lobby. Nothing freaky or anything.
Right, nothing inappropriate.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so speaking of me getting to this point, I'd like to interview you today, Dwayne. I mean, you and I know each other for quite some time now. And, you know, you're a really humble person. A lot of times you'll say things to me like, you know, I don't know why, you know, I don't look at myself as being that successful because you're humble. But, you know, I'd like to, you know, let people know who you are. I'm sure they do anyway, of course, people who are fans of our blog as well. But to really know the inner Dwayne, you know, and know how you built what you built, because you have some really unique things that I find in your school that I wish other people would follow suit with. Like, for example, you know, you don't have thousands of students, but you have hundreds, and you don't charge a small amount of money. There are guys out there that I coach that are charging pennies on the dollar, and you're charging a good premium fee for your quality of classes. So maybe share with us your philosophy on that. You know, how did you get to that point? You know, what you're doing right now?
Yeah, I didn't all of a sudden get there. It was a process. I think the biggest thing was for me was mentally coming to the decision that I really was worth more than what I was charging in the beginning. Part of it was a humility thing where, you know, and the other thing was a fear factor where I was afraid to ask for more money. But I can't remember who it was, but somebody had said something about, you know, take a look at what you're worth, like what your net worth is. And I, at the time, I really couldn't take a look at my net worth because I really wasn't worth anything. So I decided to look at my gross income for the school. And, you know, I was grossing annually about $1,000 for the school. And I thought, you know what, that's what I'm going to look at. Like I'm really going to decide that I'm a $300,000 a year person. Now, of course, I don't keep all of that. There's a lot of expenses that go along with it. But
yeah,
that helped change my mindset of, you know, what I'm worth. And maybe that's goofy that I'm equating what I'm worth to a dollar amount, but I really think it's important to be able to do that because, you know, you really are. I can't tell you how many times I've sat down with parents and students and helped relationships between them or help their grades get better or their self-esteem get better. And sometimes, you know, you're sitting in the office and it's not even out on the floor when you're teaching. It's when you're in the office doing those one-on-one things or those one-on-two things that, you know, I mean, gosh, what a therapist get paid an hour, right?
Yeah.
And that's the, I, that's the way I started looking at it. I'm like, wait a second, I'm doing exactly what they're doing, and they're paying me less. Does that all make sense?
No, you know what? It to me, of course, it makes absolute positive, you know, total sense. But I maybe to some of our listeners, it's still like that ninja in the night, you know, that's you know hiding behind the shadows. And you know, I'll give you a quick example. My girlfriend runs a yoga studio, and I went to one of her ceremonies, and it was absolutely breathtaking. It was very similar to the martial arts, of the stories of people telling how their lives were changed. You've heard it, I've heard it, where people come to you and say, wow, you changed my son's life, or you changed my life, and you've helped me do blah, blah, blah. So when we look at ourselves, we still look at ourselves in the mirror and don't look at ourselves as that counselor, where they know their fee. Because the industry has said counselors should make X amount of dollars per hour, or at least this much per private session. There's an industry standard. So I think it's important for the listeners to understand that when you say you're and you mentioned this, which again is your humility, where you said, you know, about my net worth, and I might be silly about, you know, really, you know, you have net worth in everything. You're a very spiritual person. You know, you're a family man. But when we talk about business, people have to understand as a person what they're really worth to others, right? Because we're a commodity. We're a vessel for a lesson. We are teaching people things, right? So you do all of that stuff, and that's why you're valuable. And you've done it for years. You're an expert. You're a martial art expert. So that's the value. So it makes total sense. So let's clear up, though. Tell me like, how – where was the shift? Because I want to know how people – I want people to know how you shifted. Was it an inner struggle to realize that you should charge what you're worth and get a premium dollar? And when was that time in your life where, you know, you finally, the light went off, so to speak, that aha moment?
I think I can't give you the date. I don't remember. But I think the aha moment really came when I, you know, we had worked ourselves up to a position where we were all the way up to 346 students. And that's the most that I had ever had at that time. And it was too much. I barely broke even on everything. Meaning that paying my instructors, paying myself. And even at some point, and you would think that, you know, this sounds like ridiculous, right? Like I was even going into debt on some months because I didn't have enough revenue coming in. Now I had cash flow, but it wasn't enough cash flow, and it wasn't positive cash flow. Although the majority of my people were paying me, it wasn't a billing issue. It was the fact that I just was not charging enough to be able to cover everything.
Right.
Business was booming, but in the wrong way. And so that was part of the shift for me. Was I was working so much. I was teaching so many classes, and I just felt like I was, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, you're just spinning your wheels, you're on the treadmill. And at that time, I was like, something's got to give.
Right.
I got to make more money, or I got to have less students, or get rid of instructors or something. But I couldn't get rid of instructors because, of course, we had 346 students. So there was some actual thinking that needed to happen at that time. And that's when I would say probably the apex of me switching to go, you know what, I've got to change this. I would rather have less students paying me more money than and it was an ego thing too, I think, to a certain degree, because everybody in our industry was talking about how many, you know, I would go to industry events and the first thing is, oh, you know, where are you from and how many students do you have? As if that was the measuring tool, I could boastfully say I had 346 students.
Right, right.
Well, that's where it should be. Hey, where are you from? You know, like, hey, what's your name? Where are you from? And how much do you get to keep at the end of the month? I mean, that's,
yeah. Well, you know what, my friend John Oschlager, who is a great guy, talks about whenever he meets martial artists, he says, "Hey, how you doing?" You know, and then they introduce themselves by title, and then they talk about how well their school. Like, hey, he goes, "How you doing?" And they say, "Oh, I have 340 students in them." And he's going, "No, no, I meant how are you doing? Like, you know, like I don't care about what you're making and what you're grossing and all that other stuff." So it's an interesting status. I once was in an elevator with a martial art master, and no joke, started off on the first floor. I think my floor was the eighth floor, and I said, "Hey, how are you? I'm Ali Alberigo." And it took him 8 floors to stop telling me all his titles and his ranking. I mean, at the end of my elevator opened, my buddy and I walked off, no joke. I still hadn't gotten his name or knew anything about him other than everything that he's achieved and accomplished. So it was definitely an ego-based thing. So tell me, Dwayne, like where are you as far as, you know, what to you, profitability-wise, what made you understand, like, you know, it's more is not necessarily more. You know, you could have more students, but you're not necessarily going to make more money. How could you have less students and become more profitable? I mean, that's something that I think that, you know, yeah, we could raise our prices and charge more with less people, but really there's a secret to it. Like, how do you do it? Like, what, you can't just charge more. I mean, what are you doing? What made that shift for you?
Well, I guess I would disagree to a certain extent, meaning that, yes, you can just charge more, but you also have to be smart about the back end part as well. And so I did raise my rates. There's a couple of things that I did. And I did it slowly, meaning that first thing that I did was created an upgraded program so that I could charge more. And now, so, you know, I would have our regular $139 program, you know, and then we would upgrade them to $179 program. That's the first thing that I did.
Okay.
But then I decided that I kind of wanted to switch things around a little bit, where I would really like to make more than $139 a month per, you know. So I tested it out on a few people, and I tried to sell the program at $159, and they bought. And I'm thinking, all right, well, if they buy at $159, well, they buy at $169. So then I decided to raise my price to $169. I would have people that would buy. Of course, I'd have people that wouldn't buy. But some of those people wouldn't buy at $99 a month just because they couldn't afford it. I don't necessarily think of I cannot remember sitting down with someone and them saying, you know, your price is, you know, $169, and I really don't see the value for $169. I've never had anybody say that to me. Now, maybe they thought it, but more often than not, I have people that just say, you know, well, you know, I thought it was going to be more expensive, but really $169 is a reach for us. And I would rather have that. So went from $139 to $159 to $169. I also decided to kind of differentiate myself from every other school in the area that they charge for every little extra thing that goes along with their programs. And so in raising my prices, I also started including the testing fees all the way up to black belt. I still do charge for black belt testing fees, you know, second degree, third degree, those type of things. But that helped me differentiate myself to do that. But it was a mental thing. It really was. So you can charge more. You just got to get out there and like just do it. But there is a point that they're not going to buy. I think I found that spot with the $169 price. I think I pushed it. But I will tell you, the thing that helped me through the bad, you know, economy part was that I had people that could afford to pay that, you know, prior to, and the majority of them could still pay it through the economic downturn because they themselves weren't really adversely affected by that. Had I had, you know, $99 people in, a lot of them probably would have had to quit. Does that make sense?
You know what? It totally makes sense. And, of course, you know, I think that there's a big take-home for people who are listening. One, the first thing that's the take-home, and just forgive me for pointing this out as maybe for obvious for some people, but is that, one, if you're going to raise your prices, test it, you know, and what I call it when I tell my clients, you know, try out the next 5 people, not the next one person and then change. Well, they didn't buy, so you go back and you revert back to your old prices. Try the next 5 people. If you raise your price from $120 to $145 and then you sell 3 or 2 out of the next 5, you know that it's doable, right? And then, so that's important. So really just learn to develop confidence muscles in reference to the price increase, right? That's important. The next thing to do that you mentioned too is, you know, don't always think that you have to appeal to everybody. You know, when I had, you know, 11 schools at one point, in my four local schools, actually, I'm sorry, at the time it was six local schools, I had about 1,300 students. And like you, I was making a lot of money. I was grossing and net, you know, but I was netting a good profit, but not nearly from what I was grossing, because as you build, you add on employees, you add on liabilities, you add on rents and all these other things. For you, I think it's important what you had said is that, you know, we don't necessarily have to, you know, be afraid of the price jump, because we have to look at it over a period of time. Am I correct at that? Like, if people are listening?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you make gradual increases, your confidence will increase. So if you're charging $100 a month, I would say you definitely got to jump to the $129, $139 price point, and you won't see any more or many more objections to your program, so long as they see it as $199 value that they're getting for $129. And so there's a lot of other things that are in play there. So it's not just raise your price and you know, build it and they will come type mentality. I mean, the substance has to be there. There has to be content there that they believe, and also that it's truly there, that they believe that they're getting more than what they're actually paying for.
Yeah, and you know what? Here's a study that I was actually privy to. I had some inside information that was done in the UK with a billing company there, and they had said that they asked people and interviewed thousands of people, as far as school owners go, they interviewed the clients of thousands of school owners of where they saw a price increase to be of concern. And they said anything from $19.99 and below, they really didn't bat an eyelash at. Anything above $19.99, $20 and above, they started to question. So in other words, if we raise our prices $15, most people aren't going to really complain, the majority. There are those few that are squeaking by, but I've always said this to all my clients and also, you know, to my students that are in the inner circle. You know what? If people want something so badly and they love what you do, they'll cut out one latte at Starbucks a week, or they won't buy that next video game or go to that concert, because you are up there on the level of things that they believe in, right? They want your martial arts. So that extra increase is not going to hurt them. So that's important for everyone to hear out there. It's not like you're going to put yourself in the poorhouse. You're going to lose students or lose that many of them. And by the way, if you raise your prices across the board, just think about this, $10 at 100 students, right? That's a lot of money at the end of the year, right? You know, that's a good amount of money that you've just given yourself a raise, technically.
Well, that's $12,000 more in a year.
Right, and you know, so who gets a $12,000 raise a year, you know, working in corporate America? No one. So even if you did that one $10 increase, and at a small scale, 100 students, it's going to be massive at the end of the year. And that could be the difference between paying off your home or, you know, buying a rental property for, you know, investment, or going, you know, buying a condo in Florida. I mean, the list goes on and on of what you could be doing with that money. So anyway, so tell me this, Dwayne, like when you look at money, how do you see it? And because people think money, that old saying, money, I grew up on this, money is the root to all evil. Like I heard that from my parents, who, by the way, were very poor, you know, and, you know, well, not poor, but, you know, lower income to middle income at the time when I was growing up, which was pennies compared to what people make nowadays. So what is it with you and like, what's your connection, you know, for like that song, For the Love of Money, right? Or, you know, that kind of thing. What is it?
Yeah. Well, I grew up with the same mentality that, you know, money is evil, money is evil. You know, now I mean, I take a biblical approach to money. I mean, you know, the love, some people leave that out. The love of money is the root of all evils. So it's when you make money your God, if you will, that's when it's a bad thing. But, you know, I guess I look at money now as a tool. A tool to be able to help my business grow, a tool to be able to help, you know, my employees, a tool to be able to help, obviously, my family, you know, and then any other, you know, my church or any other things that I give to, the more money that I'm able to make is the more people that I'm able to help. And so I look at it as a tool, And it gives me the freedom to be able to do a whole bunch more things than I would ever be able to do. The more that I am able to make, what corresponds for me is that allows me to have more of the things that I would like, or even time off.
Right.
Money gives me the ability to be able to have time off because I can hire people to be able to do things that, at this point I shouldn't be doing.
Right.
And that somebody else should be doing, and that gives me more of that ability to have that time off.
Right. So one thing that you did say, and going into a biblical sense where we love money to the point where we will do things that are immoral or illegal, that and money controls who we are, then I agree. But I actually love the art of money. I love money. When I say I love it, I love making it. I'm not sitting home with money and counting it and throwing it in the air and making funny little sounds as I would like the evil guy. I enjoy the concept of making money, coming up with an idea, packaging it in the right way, and then selling it to someone where it can inevitably in my business, in our business, benefit someone and change their lives. So when martial artists who are out there listening and they're struggling with the art of making money, like why is it that they they feel bad? And the funny thing is, it's not just them that feel it. It's like people look at us as martial art instructors or school teachers, that we shouldn't make money, where we should be doing it for free. They're the same thing with yoga teachers. They're not supposed to be in it for the money. However, if a school owner can't make money, he's going to not be able to teach the yoga or teach the martial arts or teach the spiritual lessons. So in essence, if they don't have money, the lessons are gone. I've had people who, who are upset that we raise prices, yet they're out. They'll go, I can't believe it's $10 more a month. And then they went out and bought a $15,000, whatever, swimming pool or brand new car. So, it's really what they want to spend it on. It's not really about the money itself. Right? Does that make sense?
It perfectly makes sense. I've got a chiropractor that in town here that I help, and that was one of his biggest obstacles was money. And now, now that we've helped him kind of change his viewpoint on money, he still struggles a little bit, but nothing like he was before. Because before he would not bill for certain things that he would do. Because, who really feels like they should bill you to teach you how to ice and stretch?
Right.
Well,
right.
In the chiropractic industry, there's a code for that. And they should be billed for that.
Right.
That's something that everybody, we take for granted. Of course, okay, yeah, I know how to ice and stretch. But when a professional doctor teaches you how to do it, they're going to charge you for it. And I'm like, look, these things are things that you're giving to your, I wanted to say student, but that's not what I meant. You're giving to your patient, and it's billable. There's nothing wrong with billing for that. If I teach a private lesson, I may teach you how to do a certain stretch in that private lesson, but I'm billing you for that private lesson. And I don't teach private lessons. I actually, that's included into our program, but if I were to teach a private lesson, I'd bill extra for that. So I kind of equated that to him. To say, hey, look, even I do that. If there's extra things that I'm teaching and it's billable, you're going to get billed for it. And so you should do that the same way. And we've changed his business around just by doing that. He's actually charging more. I mean, he didn't raise his prices, but now he's actually charging for the things that everything that he's doing, as opposed to before he was just charging for select things like the adjustment or the,
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And you know what's interesting? If you think about it, and you corrected yourself and you said that it's not a student, but you did say you're teaching someone how to stretch. So honestly, if you're teaching and instructing, I love the old Japanese mentality. Like they take their little son out on a fishing trip and they never said, we're going to go fishing. They said, we're going to learn the art of fishing. They went out and they did gardening. Well, we're learning the art of gardening. We're not just gardening. Everything was a lesson. And that's what I love about the Japanese mentality, or at least back in ancient times, right? So we are always teaching. And here's the thing. If we take it a child's life and we turn it around, I always ask, well, what would that be worth? Like I always say, what would it be worth to you as if your son had the choice between taking drugs and not, and the decision that said leaned him in the direction of not was my positive motivational classes and teaching the child self-esteem and strength enough to not be able to do it in confidence, how much would that be worth to a parent? And then those parents would say, well, there's no amount of money in the world, right? So
right.
We have to understand that we are changing lives. In fact, I just had the privilege about 2 or 3 weeks ago to go to a graduation party. My first youngest student to train with me was 4 or 5 years old, just graduated law school. Then the very next weekend, one of my students came in to visit and sat with the students. He just graduated, and he's going to be an emergency room doctor. And they both told the kids how the martial arts helped them. And one kid said to them, how much have you used your martial arts in your life? You know, and he says, I use it every day. And they were all like, oh, that's cool. He goes, but not physically. I use it mentally. All the lessons that Shion taught me, not to give up, not to quit, not to, you know, whatever. And those are the lessons that are life-changing. Now, people should know that. We shouldn't be afraid to toot our own horn. Right?
Yeah, and it's even better. Yeah, but it's awesome that when you can bring somebody else to toot it in for you. I mean, that's even better.
Yeah, and you know, you don't have to toot your own horn, which some martial artists do. I'm great, I'm a grandmaster, I'm this, you should bow down to me. But, you know, sometimes it's just about educating people. Like, Dwayne, right. you tooted your own horn in a very subtle way about why your school has these added values. You don't charge for testing, you don't do this, you don't do that, it's all included. I mean, you subtly just tooted your own horn, and it wasn't in an egotistical, you know, way. You didn't put anyone else down. You didn't make other schools sound bad. However, you're doing much different, and you're doing things that are good for the student. So that to me, is the way we toot our own horn. In fact, maybe I have an article I wrote on tooting your own horn. Maybe we can include that as a download.
Okay.
Yeah, and but so tell me about you mentioned a few things, like you make more money, you could help more people, you could give people more jobs, you could help your community, you could help your family. So to you, money is not the root to all evil. Money is not a bad thing. Money is a good thing when being utilized as a tool, right? To help you achieve the good things in life that you want to achieve.
Absolutely. And you know what? I guess I also look at it that who best to make more money than me? Because I'm going to do the best thing that I possibly can with it. So maybe that's an egotistical way of looking at it, but I know that I'm going to give this, and I know I'm going to do this with it or that with it. And so who better than to make the money? Also, I mean, when I literally decided when I was at that 346 student mark and barely making anything, that when I raised my prices, well, here's what I wanted to do. My goal was to downsize to
right.
200 students. I just wanted 200 students.
Right.
And I wanted them all paying me $169 a month. And
right.
I would be content with that.
Right.
Because I know I did the math. I looked at the math. Even if, you know, 5% doesn't pay you per month because of hardships or whatever,
right?
I'm still doing good, you know?
And let me quickly point out to people really what that sounds like. So 200 students at $169 a month is $33,800 a month. That's $34,000. And that's just for tuition. So let's just say even 10% of those people don't pay, you're making $30,000 in a very controlled environment without a huge amount of stress, right? And then now I would say with the proper retail, which most people who are listening look at retail as a bad word. I know that because I coach people all the time where they look at retail as an annoyance, as an oversell, as, you know, something that they shouldn't be pushing. When in reality, I've actually taught my schools that I coach how to take their retail and quadruple what they're selling and make their clients happier and more raving fans than ever by having what's available to them that they want, right? So anyway, but you could add on another 20% in retail, you know, drinks and gear and things and special seminars and whatever else you do. You're looking at being a $35,000 to $40,000 school with a very low amount of stress, right?
Yeah, that's what I want.
Exactly. So when people are always after the big, grandest, biggest facility, I often shake my head and try to talk them out of it. When people say, I'm going to open up a second and a third location before their first location is really hopping and popping, I try to talk them out of it. I often try to talk them out of going for the 400-student model. I've been there. You've been there. It's a lot to maintain. If you think you have a few complaining parents now, triple that. And then, with the three times the amount of students, three times the amount of complaints, three times the amount of wear and tear, heat, electricity, air conditioning, all of that stuff. So you can make massive money with a smaller school model and massive income and profitability.
Well, less stress, more time off, and you, I really believe you make a better impact on not only the students, also the parents, and also your staff. You can have a more intimate connection with your staff as well when it's a smaller setting.
Right. And you know what? The appearance of it as well. Everyone feels special. I once did a DVD that was it called Business Success Strategies. It's still available. It's out there. I don't even know what I have left of it. But it basically was how different levels and the mentality of the students. Like, for example, you have 30 students. You know every one of their names. You know everything that they do, what they eat. They buy every product, every T-shirt you have. And then you grow to about 50 or 80 students. Things slightly change. 100 students, people start looking. They don't have the intimacy. So I equated it like having a family, having an extended family, living within a little town to a big city to a continent, and that's how they look at it. They'll look at like, oh, I don't have to go to that event. Sensei's not going to miss me. When you had only 20, they're like, oh, we have to go. It's part of what we do. We're a family, And so if you could keep that mindset going in your school, build that culture, and have that camaraderie and that what I call wearing your school colors with pride, it's life changing when it comes to business.
Yeah, absolutely, and you, just the even the branding that occurs and that the good word of mouth that occurs. It's not that you won't have problem people, but you'll have very few and far between. And the
Right.
other thing too is growing your school to 300, 400 students. And I'm not against it. I just it's not the model I want.
Right.
Most often, and not everybody fits this category, so if you're listening to this, forgive me because I don't necessarily mean everybody, but sometimes the only reason that you get that to that number is because of the amount of money that you're charging. You're
Right.
charging $100 a month, yeah, and you can get 400 people into your school.
Right.
But I will tell you that this has been so true in my business life is the people that complain the most pay the least.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll verify that 100%. And by the way, I don't necessarily agree with you that if you lower your prices, you're going to get more students because I coach more struggling school owners that are at the low. I mean, I have one client in Pennsylvania that struggles continuously and his prices are like $69 a month. I had a guy recently, he's been with me 2 years now, and he's amazing Aikido practitioner. And at first we started off, he was charging far too little. He raised his prices. And we added on, I'm thinking we raised his prices $40 a month. And he was really nervous. And I said, let's just do that for the new people. And within the first five people, they all signed up without even batting an eyelash. He actually emailed me and said, I feel like I'm bad, like I did something wrong because it's too easy. He felt bad about charging more money. It was too easy. And then eventually we worked for like a year or so to build his value of who he believed he was. And now he's charging even more. We have an upgrade program, which is 160 a month. He's doing sword classes, which are more than that. He's literally doubled his income without adding any new students on. Right?
Yeah.
So, or close to doubling. And so it's really all about knowing, and by the way, my comment was that just because you charge little doesn't mean you're going to have more students. Sometimes people look at cheap, inexpensive stuff or an inexpensive price is what the old saying is you get what you pay for. So they think if it's cheap, it must not be that good. I've always been the most expensive school in my town. Still am, always will be. When someone raises their prices to meet me, I go a little higher, only because I have to be the highest cost one because I'm the best school in the area. That's the way I look at it, and I should be getting paid for that. So it's important. So in closing, Dwayne, we've been on for a little bit of time. So tell me a little bit about how people, if they ask you and they want to know why you charge more, I mean, how confidently, and I know you can, but why do you feel so confident about why, you know, what are the things that you put in place or why you feel confident about who you are and what you give? I know we talked about the, including the testing and some other things, but I know your school, you're very popular within your community. You know, you're rated as one of the best schools in the township and the area. So tell me, like, what is it that makes you feel like, and what have you done to make the school that way? Give us like maybe four or five little quick tips of what you've done to shift your school into excellence.
Certainly. I would say, you know, one of the biggest things is, you know, I've aligned myself, and this was on purpose, but it's been beneficial, is I've aligned myself with the school systems. And so, you know, for us, I mean, there's not many teachers and many principals in our area at all that don't know us. Now, of course, maybe there's people that don't like us, but, you know, so that's one of the biggest things that I did was I knew that my, you know, the local teachers and principals and the school systems obviously had my clientele, the people that I wanted. But I also back it up with the program that I have. And what I mean by that is, you know, not only do we have a structured way from white to black and beyond, but our character building development system that we have is, you know, not fly by night, just mat chats where we sit down and hope that things happen. There's specific things that, you know, it's structured, meaning that from white to black belt and beyond, it's structured on what's going to be said, what's going to be required, not just from a physical basis, but then also from a mental basis as well. So okay. That's, you know, the other thing that goes along with it. Of course, yeah, I don't charge anything extra for the belt testings, the private lessons. I also have an online video curriculum that my students
get. Okay, so let me just, I don't want to interrupt your flow. So real quickly, though, bullet point. Number one is create credibility within your community, right? That's the first thing. You know, school systems aligning with them and getting them to know that you have a great program, right? That is really great. Not just us saying it's great, but it's proven, correct?
Well, and that's why, I have always done a teacher appreciation award night. So the teachers come in, they get to see a class, their kid doing a class, the kid gives them an award. I have local businesses that donate things to the teachers, and I make it a big deal. That's also why I've done hundreds of school speeches. That's why I do the field trips that I do, because I want these educators to, and the parents that come in for the field trips too, for them to be able to see exactly what happens, because hearing about it and seeing are two different things.
Right. Okay, great. So that's definitely, so credibility, community support, knowing, you know, people knowing that you're the place in town that you got to go to. Number two, you had said, what was the next thing you had mentioned was, I'm thinking now.
I talked about, I talked about that, you know, the actual curriculum. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you talked about how you have a leadership program that has an actual but a legitimate curriculum. It's not like somebody, like for my leadership team too, we have leadership lessons, you know, there are a whole bunch of things that we do that, you know, they have homework assignments. So building something that is Ivy League mentality, could I say it like that? You know, something that is a really Ivy League mentality.
Absolutely. And then inside of, and this is the little tip, inside of those lessons, you need, and again, this just reinforces the number one thing that I talked about, that you need the teachers to be able to sign off on certain things, or the parents to sign off on certain things to show that they did it, or show that that even the teacher or the parent read a portion of what you asked them to read in there, so that, you know, it's strategically done so that they know what their student is learning or their child is learning.
Right. So they could follow along, and it's legitimate. It's not like something that is just, you know, hey, you know, it's really powerful. Okay, and then the third thing you mentioned was building a curriculum or a program, so to speak, that has benefits to it. So you had talked about including testing and not needing to pay for private lessons and doing other things where there's a value to why people would want to go to you, right?
Right, and then one of the biggest things I think that people like too is that my online video-based curriculum that has videos of me doing every single technique that they have to know, and it's password protected. It, you know, if you're a white belt, you only see the white belt material. I mean, all the way up to it's actually all the way up to fourth degree black belt now, just because I only have a fourth degree is the highest that I have here right now. So.
Right, right. So that's also for free. They get that as an additional added benefit.
Correct.
Right. Amazing. That's great. So now, what were some of the other things? That's three bullet points. So what's the fourth and the fifth that you would say that you include?
Well, I think what differentiates us is, I mean, we are, and this is simple, very simplistic, but, you know, we are actively seeking out our, and this probably sounds goofy, but we actively seek out our clientele and even past clientele, or anybody else that I know, in the newspaper. So we've got like the weekly newspaper and then the daily newspapers that are in town here that we actually, like if I see somebody or my program director sees somebody, or if my wife sees somebody that's from the past or something, because maybe my program director, she wasn't here 10 years ago,
right,
we'll cut out the article and we'll mail it to them and I'll write a little note. I'll read the article and see why they were in the paper. I read, you know, and I send them the actual article in the mail. So, you know, we do birthday cards. We do, you know, Christmas cards. I mean, so we're actively staying in contact with them. And then also there are certain steps from white to black belt and beyond. And we've talked about this on a previous call that, you know, like your 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 calls, your different mailings that happen at different times or different emails that happen at different times or different phone calls that happen at different times strategically put into your system so that, you know, nothing is left to chance.
Right, right. Now, you know, it's interesting. I hear about the quality. I just was away at a resort spa in the Catskills. It was called the Emerson. And the place was absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, they had free video rentals with a DVD in your room. So at the end of the night, you could just go grab whatever DVD. It was like Blockbuster. They had this big DVD collection. They continuously brought the little Keurig coffees into the room, as many as you needed. They'd call up and find out, you know, when you were there, or they'd knock on the door and say, do you need anything else? There were waters in the refrigerator. I'm really leery about buying waters from hotel refrigerators or drinking them because they usually charge you $6 a water, you know, and you could go down to the gas station and buy them for a buck. And so I said, what's the cost on the water? He's like, oh, no, sir, they're totally free. We'll just, you drink them, we just keep loading the refrigerator up. There's all these little tiny things that made the experience so amazing. So it's those things in the martial arts that we do for our students, those little things that you're giving and doing and helping people with that makes for the guest experience, the client experience. That's what, but sometimes people just assume that's what every karate school or every martial arts school does. So that's why, back to my toot your own horn, we have to let people know that not every school does that, you know, especially when we're talking about competitors or in general about other schools. So that's important. So how about one last thing, and then we'll sum up, they'll close up the call.
Yeah, I probably would have thrown this in with the teacher thing, but I've written a few books, and the purpose for writing a few books is because I want to be seen more than just a kick and punch type of guy here. I want them to see that there's actual substance to this martial arts program and what we teach here. So there's some, you know, like goal setting book and, you know, how to raise your child self-esteem book. And, you know, the one that I did this year was called A Year to Remember. It's 52 weeks of reflection and affirmations to, you know, transform you into a more positive, productive patient, person, partner, and parent. And when I have – every year I try to do a small little book. And so when the teachers come in for Teacher Appreciation Day, I give them the latest book.
Wow, that's great. That's awesome. So another added benefit. That's amazing. So there are like five – there are many more. I mean, you know, within each one you mentioned 10 different things. So there are tons of different things that you mentioned. But like five major bullet points of what separated you, what made you to have, you know, or made you feel confident enough in your own program that you believed you separate yourself from the rest. And I like that. I think that that's super important. And, you know, people out there who are listening, you should maybe do what I call a personal inventory. You know, look at yourself and see, like, what makes you special? Like, what makes your program special? What? Why would people want to buy from you or be in your school or stay in your school when they have choices of 50 or 60 other ones right around town? And it's becoming more and more like that, where there's so many of our, you know, competitions, competitors out there. So, you know, what is it that gives, what gives you your culture? So start thinking about that. That's your homework assignment on this call. And Dwayne, I'd like to actually continue this conversation maybe another time, a little bit more of an interview, because I'd like maybe you to talk a little bit about how you do your student graduations and, you know, get people in the school teachers, you know, the teacher appreciation days. And, you know, maybe we won't give out all the secrets, but let's just throw a little bit out there for food for thought and, you know, get people thinking about what you do. So I thank you for sharing with us all your different little points today. It was, I liked it and I learned from it.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I will add one small last thing is we are the only full-time martial arts school in our town, meaning that everybody else works a day job, and then they run their martial arts school at night. We don't do that, and we have two full-time people here, myself and then my head instructor. And so that also separates us from everybody else. So I've had parents, you know, that have said things before, asked questions about, you know, why, you know, why your school over any other school. I've had a few of those, not much, but I've had a few of those. And I, that's one of the reasons that I've told them is that we're a full-time martial arts school, meaning that I spend, you know, I spend full time working on my program to make sure that it's going to be the best and learning things that are going to be the best and staying up to date on things so that I could be the best martial arts instructor for your child and for your family.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that that's important because, you know, knowing, like, even myself, I employ full-time instructors, and I am a full-time instructor myself. I'm not out working a day job and coming in exhausted with a bad attitude because, you know, my equipment didn't work well or another client busted my chops or, you know, I'm coming in and I'm, you know, you wouldn't want to have a psychologist or a psychiatrist meeting you at the door in there and saying, hey, I'll be with you in 10 minutes. I just got to clean it, change out of my masonry clothing or my landscaping outfit into my suit and tie so I could counsel you, right? We'd second guess that, wouldn't we? So it's important for us to show ourselves as the consummate professional. And so that's a big one. I like it. That's an added thing that you just shared with everybody. So yeah, some incredible nuggets and jewels in this call. I appreciate you, Dwayne. Thanks for sharing with all the people. And I hope everyone listens to this and takes some notes and actually does something about it. You know, it's time, you know, our motto should be it's time to take action. You know, I think that that's important. There's no sense of waiting. There's nothing like the present. The people who wait are the ones that are left behind. So take action today on some of these ideas and put them into your culture and build a better organization. So that's it. So what do you want to close up, Dwayne?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the interview. And, you know, everybody, I hope you picked up a few things, you know, from what we talked about today. And we'll speak to you, obviously, on the next call. Maybe we'll interview Allie next time.
Yeah, that'd be cool too, and maybe I'd like to do a little more with you, but yeah, let's definitely do something soon. Until the next call, and we look forward to talking to, or you coming on and checking in with us again. And please don't forget to share this blog post or our interview with other people so that other school owners, like-minded professionals, can benefit as well. Don't just hold this as a secret. Share it with others and post it on your Facebook page and post it on pages that you're associated with other school owners and share this. And also give us a little bit of an endorsement because it you know, it helps open people up to listening. So thank you very much, Dwayne. Thank you, and let's chat soon.
Sounds good. Bye, everybody.
Take care.